ability to organize them properly, to bring their work into smooth, harmonious totality. And this one stubborn anthropologist who's made a lucky discovery, he sits there smiling, handsome as video star. What does he care how he upsets my plans? He thinks he has upper hand over me. Chang forced a smile. There is great excitement aside over your discovery, he began. Yes, said Carlton, his own smile broadening. I've received several dozen messages from all over the world, even China. Chang closed his eyes slowly, a tactic he used when he did not want to reveal his inner thoughts. He felt a surge of anger at this upstart who was wrecking his schedules, who was threatening to wrest control of this operation from his hands. Carlton thought of a lizard basking on a sunny rock as he waited for Chang to open his eyes again, and his mouth. Waterman urges me to provide you with all assistance you may require, Chang said at last, his eyes still closed. I'm glad to hear it. Snapping his eyes open, Chang added, he also tells me that United States government is canceling all its funding for our operation. We may be forced to abandon our work here and return to Earth. Carlton's head flicked back as if he'd been slapped. Good, Chang thought. Let him understand the consequences. We can't stop the work here, the anthropologist said. Hell, we've just started. I agree with your sentiment, said Chang. But if Foundation cannot raise enough money to replace funds that American government is withdrawing, we will be forced to go home. Waterman won't let that happen. He'll figure out a way. Let us hope so. In meantime, there is question of how to adequately assist you in your work. I've got plenty of volunteers. Chang shook his head slowly. I cannot allow staff personnel to work for you on volunteer basis. They are already working 8 to 12 hours a day on their assigned duties, more in many cases. But if they want to, their eagerness to help you outweighs their common sense. They cannot help you with your digging for several hours each day and still work effectively at their regular tasks. Productivity will decline. People will fall asleep on their jobs. There will be accidents, dangerous accidents. Carlton started to reply, hesitated, then offered, what about the team coming back from Hellaspace? They're supposed to be shipped back to Earth. What if some of them volunteered to work with me full-time? Highly trained geologists and biologists slaving like coolies in that pit of yours? His smile turning almost into a smirk, Carlton replied, Dr. Chang, may I remind you that I'm a highly trained anthropologist and I've been slaving like a coolie for months. By myself. Now I need help. And your superiors, Earthside, agree that you should provide it to me. Chang's self-discipline snapped. May I remind you that you are a fugitive from very serious criminal charges on Earth? Carlton's smile evaporated. Those charges are baseless, and you know it. I know that charges have never been settled. We took you into our program and allowed you to come to Mars despite them. Grimly, Carlton said, that's got nothing to do with the question at hand. Will you allow me to use some of the people returning from the Hellaspace? Chang closed his eyes again, thinking, it is good stratagem. People returning from Hellas are due to be shipped home. A few of them can stay here at Dithonium and work with him. Waterman is urging me to help him. This is how to do that without wrecking all our other work. Well, Carlton demanded. Opening his eyes, Chang said mildly, you may ask personnel returning from Hellas. If any of them volunteer to remain here instead of returning to Earth, let it be so. Carlton took in a deep breath, as if he'd just accomplished an incredibly difficult feat. Thank you, Dr. Chang, he said, his voice low. How many hands will you need? Chang asked. 6 for now. More than that, and we'll just get in each other's way. But later on, as things progress... 6, Chang repeated. We cannot accommodate 6 additional people here without straining our resources. 5, actually, said Carlton. Ms. McManus has already volunteered to work with me. The nanotechnologist? She has her regular duties. She says she can spend at least half her days working on the excavation. Chang couldn't help asking, "And where will she spend her nights?" Carlton's face froze. After several heartbeats, he replied tightly, "That's her business, not yours." Southwest Airlines Flight 799. As he rode the jet airliner back toward Albuquerque, Jamie desperately tried to think of some way, some method of raising support for the Mars program. "I'll have to see New Mexico senators," he told himself. "Maybe get the people running the spaceport down in Alamogordo to put pressure on the politicians. I can go to the media," he added. "Get Dex to put together a TV special out of all the virtual reality tours we've done on Mars. Do a VR show on the fossil Carlton's discovered. That ought to bring in public support. Maybe we can start a public drive for funds, get ordinary people to contribute to keeping the Mars program going." He leaned his head against the seat back, planning, thinking, hoping. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the land sliding past, endless miles of dry, brittle brown where once there had been green fields of grain as far as the eye could see. The greenhouse warming had brought drought to America's heartland. The nation's breadbasket was withering away. Jamie closed his eyes, feeling overwhelmed by what was happening to the world, to two worlds, to him and everything he cared about. He closed his eyes and immediately found himself on Mars. In his mind, he stood at the edge of the tranquil sea, beneath a clear sky of perfect turquoise blue, while the sun's warmth baked into his bare shoulders. The gentle waves lapped at his feet, and the water stretched to the horizon and far beyond. Strangely, Jamie felt no misgivings at seeing so much water on Mars. "It's not very deep," he told himself. "Nowhere near as deep as the ocean basins on the Blue World." Then it struck him. Mars was once a blue world, too. Turning, he looked back across the land. It was not a frigid red desert. The land was golden with grain that waved gracefully in the gentle breeze. Far in the distance, mountains rose dramatically, bluish-green almost up to their bare granite summits. Water means life, Jamie knew. Mars is young and alive. He looked up into the cloudless sky, squinting against the sun's brightness. "But Coyote will send monsters to destroy all this," he knew. "This will end soon." "This is First Officer De La Hoya speaking," a woman's voice came through the cabin speakers. "We are approaching the Albuquerque area." Jamie blinked and rubbed his eyes, his vision of ancient Mars fading away. Outside the airliner's window, he saw a familiar yet strange landscape sliding by. Rugged mesas and tortuous arroyos covered with green. The abrupt climate change had bizarrely brought plentiful rain to the stark scrublands of the desert southwest. The Gulf of California was invading the Colorado River Basin. Yuma was already flooded, and there were dark jokes about Albuquerque itself becoming a seaside resort town. The lands of the Navajos and other Native Americans farther north were green and burgeoning. The Navajo side of Jamie's mind remembered grimly that the Anglos were already making inroads on reservation land. Refugees driven from the flooded coastal cities formed a pressure block that was trying to drive the people from their own territory. "To our left, in just about a minute, you'll be able to see a clipper ship launch from the New Mexico spaceport near Alamogordo," the plane's first officer continued. Passengers on the right side of the cabin got up from their seats and crowded over the shoulders of those in the left-hand seats for a view of the rocket's liftoff. Jamie, on an aisle seat, leaned forward and peered through the plane's oval window. "There it is!" somebody shouted. Jamie saw a pillar of white smoke rising fast beyond the distant mountains, up, up into the crystalline blue sky. He knew that the clipper ship was a squat cone of gleaming composite plastic, carrying up to 100 passengers across the Pacific in half an hour. Or maybe this flight was going to one of the space stations in orbit around the Earth. He remembered the thunder of the